I want to talk about the Shishastika prayers of Mahaprabhu. Especially in the light of the commentary on them by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He wrote a commentary on the Shishastika prayers. And also there's the Harinam Chintamani. And then a supplement to that called Bhajana Rahasya. Rahasya means esoteric knowledge. And on all of these, he really illuminates the Shishastika prayers of Mahaprabhu. And I discovered all these things. It was interesting that, you know, as a new devotee, we memorize the Shishastika prayers. We sat in the temple room every morning and recited them. And but the purport was, so go out and distribute books. Which is, of course, I mean, Sankirtan. But we didn't really get into it. And, but now we have a lot more sources for understanding these prayers. First of all, there's the translation that Prabhupada did of Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the very last chapter is about Shishastika prayers. There Krishnadas Kaviraj narrates depicts Mahaprabhu reciting these prayers to Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy. Krishnadas Kaviraj tells us what Mahaprabhu was feeling as he said each of the prayers. And often there's the prayers in Sanskrit, and then there's a Bengali translation by Mahaprabhu, or summary, or and especially in the last one, a very, very long elaboration of the prayers. So sadhana and sadhya are both in these prayers. And they correspond to the steps that lead to prema that are given us in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that sequence the chronological order adau shraddha. In the very beginning, there must be faith, and this should be followed by the sangha, and then bhajana kriya, and then anartha nirvritti, and so on, all the way up these stages. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that the very first verse of the Shishastika prayers is about shraddha. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is promising us that what will happen if we attain the perfection of Sankirtan. See, the word Sankirtan, of course, means spreading the glories of the holy name. The word San means a collection. So when people chant together, that's Sankirtan. When you spread it to a lot of people, that's Sankirtan. But the other sense of the prefix San is, as in the word Sanskrit, it indicates completeness or thoroughness. So when there is the accomplishment, when the holy name is thoroughly or completely or perfectly chanted, this is what happens. Cheta darpana marjanam, the mirror of the mind is cleansed. The blazing fire of material existence is extinguished. The Sankirtan awakens our ultimate good fortune, our spiritual identity, in the same way that the moon, the light of the moon, or makes the white blooming lily open up. Sankirtan is like the bridegroom who gives life to the bride who is transcendental knowledge, makes the ocean of bliss forever increase, gives us at every step a taste of Amrita. And it is, well, two things. Sarvatma Snapanam, it is the bath for the entire self. Because you may wonder if all this black nectar and bliss is coming out of Sankirtan, well, maybe it's like a little heavy. How can it be pure? No, it's your bath. It's for the whole self. Or also another reading of Sarvatma Snapanam is for everybody, all souls. So these are all the benedictions that come when there is the victory of Sankirtan. Victory means that Sankirtan has to become victorious. That means it has to be achieved. And that indicates that there is a process to follow. But we should believe Mahaprabhu. This is his testimony. These are the verses that the verse that he wrote. He promises these are the things that will happen. So therefore, that's why this is Shraddha. We should have this confidence. The next verse is really about anartha nirvritti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes it as sadhu sanghe anartha nirvritti. Practicing devotional service in the association devotees so that purification takes place. So he takes these three steps and kind of puts them into one and goes right to anartha nirvritti. And so this, the second text is really about that stage. And of course there's a particular stage of eradication of anarthas that's really a big preoccupation. It continues. None of these stages, by the way, just like Shraddha is in the beginning, and as you progress, it just gets stronger and stronger and stronger. It doesn't go away. It's just a part of everything that we do. In fact, the advancement of devotees, one measure is their degree of Shraddha. And the same way with anartha nirvritti, this is one stage within it. And even in the very beginning, before you've been initiated, when there's some purification, there's some anarthas being removed. So they go before and after. And similarly, you can get a very early, at least a glimpse of ruchi, or these, not like it's rigid compartments, but this is the process. So this is a very interesting verse. Namakari bahuda nidya sarva shaktista taripita niyamate smaranana kalaha. What he says here, you have many names and you've put your complete potency in them. Literally what he says is, and there are no restrictions as to time. That seems to be taken by Prabhupada and others as time and so on. There are no hard and fast rules for chanting. Like Gayatri, there's three times. And you've got to go through a whole rigmarole if you really follow the rules for chanting it. We don't usually do all that in this cut, but for the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, you chant it all the time. That's because later on it will say, Kirtaniya Sadahari. So you've made it, Tavakripa Bhagavan, this is your mercy. Mamapi durdaiva middhi samniha jani raga. But my misfortune is that in spite of all this, I still develop no attraction for them. When Prabhupada translates this verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the translation he says, But because of my offenses, no attraction arises in them. Because all the commentators say that this is... So it's, that's why it's about anatta nirvritti. That's why it's about the clearing up of offenses. So if you consult that last chapter, you'll see this is how Prabhupada translates it. Because of my offenses. So of course Mahaprabhu is representing himself as an ordinary soul. But it's instructive that and you see in this verse, there's two things. Tava kripa, mama durdaiva. Your mercy, this real sense of the Lord's mercy, his bounty in giving the holy names, making it easy to chant. He's like, done everything. But still, mama durdaiva, my misfortune. And it says that when Mahaprabhu chanted this verse, Krishna's coverage says he felt vishada and danya, lamentation and humility. And that is really the important element in getting through anatta nirvritti, because one has to realize, here's the Lord, the holy name is on the plate before me, just offering everything to me, and still I'm not interested. Why if Krishna has come and given me his holy name and enabled me to chant it even though I've got no qualifications whatsoever, Prabhupada and others have moved heaven and earth so I can chant the holy name, and still I have to force my attention. What's wrong with me? This is the sense of that verse. This is my... So, but you see what happens. There's remorse, and then there's humility. Humility means, okay, I accept it. I'm not the greatest guy in the world. I've been left Krishna, I turned away, I've been here for so long. And so, in this way, you see that actual humility begins to develop on this stage, which is why, you know, there's a transition to the next verse, Trinada Pisuni Chenatari Vasation. That's where the humility then becomes a permanent state. And the next verse is now Nishta. This means that the kind of up and down quality, on off again quality of devotional service is pretty much gone away. That obstacles are disappearing that make our practice, our bhajana kriya, anishtita, unsteady. Now it becomes steady here. And it says the means by which one can now pursue this. One is this humility. Like grass. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has a kind of nice meditation that I appreciate very much. He says that, and I thought of it when I heard someone say to Prabhupada, how can I become humble? In the sense that how can I, with my good looks, my education, my talents and my abilities, possibly force myself in the unnatural and artificial position of thinking of myself as low. Right? Prabhupada just looked at him. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that because we have a human body and mind, we think of ourselves as pretty important. But just to elaborate a little on the way he says it, he says, if you think of the size of a spirit soul, we're spirit souls, and each spirit soul is 1/10,000th tip of the hair. So, actually very, very tiny. So just imagine all the souls all together. Very, very tiny souls, and so many of them spread out as far as you can see. What they most resemble is one of these lawns of grass, the blades of grass. So actually, he says this body is natural and appropriate to the actual condition of the spirit soul. So you can look at it. Every time, talk about everything reminds you of Krishna. Every time you see some grass, you know, you can think, there it is. That's where I belong. I'm one of these guys, you know. So that's that one, by means of thinking oneself like that, by means of being tolerant like the tree. That's why every tree is a lesson also. Every time you see grass, every time you see tree, we got plenty of it all around here. You can remember Mahaprabhu's instruction here, like a tree. And he Mahaprabhu elaborates that the tree has two things. Doesn't protest when the woodsman comes to chop him down. He doesn't protest, and in fact provides the person with a hatchet fruit for his lunch and some shade to sleep under before he chops him down. This is the nature of this thing. And then amanina manadena, by means of amanina, not wanting any respect for oneself, and wanting to give respect for others. When these are the qualities, then you can go on chanting all the time in the state of mind. Humility. In the beginning, humility is very hard because of our false ego. But then if we realize that the false ego is the not-self and it's a construct, it's really, our false ego is built as a defense against Krishna. And it doesn't do us any good. It doesn't do us any service. It's a total Hollywood construction that has no basis in reality. We should let go of it. What are we defending ourselves against? What are we afraid of, that we have to have this big false ego? What do we identify with the body and the mind, and I'm this, I'm that, and make up all these lying biographies to tell ourselves? And it's all completely unnecessary. One of the terrible things that happens in Krishna consciousness is, at a certain point, if we chant properly, Krishna shows us our own false ego. And it's just so embarrassing. This is one of the hard things to go through. It's just so awful. You know. But the weird thing is, then it comes, if you're not careful, it comes right back. You know, it sneaks up on you, grabs you, and suddenly you're right back into it. Because, you know, these are old patterns like this. But he'll show it to us. And we get rid of it. And then there's such a relief, because I no longer... Because the project of defending a false ego is exhausting. It takes all this mental energy and all this tension. And because it's basically a lie. You know, if you're really trying to tell a lie to somebody and sustain it, you got to be careful all the time. You got to be consistent. You know, the truth is easy because it's there and it's one thing. But if you tell a lie, you have to remember which lie you told and how you told it, and you know, all these different. It's like really exhausting. I mean, and there's always the, you know, anxiety about being discovered and all this other kind of thing. So our false ego is like that. It just takes up so much energy, and so you could just lay that burden down, and nothing bad happens. It's a big defense against nothing. And it just stood in the way between ourselves and Krishna. So this also, these things also happen as part of the sadhana. And different things are going on, because while we're in the process of dismantling our material false self, something else is growing or appearing, and that's the true self. So and of course in the holy name we're thinking of Krishna, and Krishna is also slowly becoming revealed to us. This is the description of this Namabhasa, the dawning twilight of the holy name. When we are chanting on the clearing stage, the Shuddha Nam, the pure name, is like the sun that's still below the horizon, but this dawning light of the holy name is killing off all our sins and offenses the same way that the dawning twilight makes the forest safe, because the robbers and the thieves and the wild animals and the Bhutas, Pretas and Pischalas and all these things, they all go away, even when the sun is below the horizon. So we should feel that happening. We should feel lust, greed, anger decreasing. We should feel these other bad things starting to go away. And if it's not happening, we should take remedial measures. So we should feel that, and humility starts to become attractive to us. And I'll tell you why humility becomes attractive to great devotees. Because it's people, you know, they have this idea of the slave mentality or servile thing, or maybe you're, what's the word, masochistic. You're masochistic. You get pleasure out of being punished. That's not the reason. The reason is because feeling for Krishna starts to develop. One notices that when the more the false ego goes away and the humbler I get, the more love of God increases. And so that is why people who want to increase their love for Krishna, they seek out humility. They go out of their way to avoid occasions that might lead to pride. And it's not because it's a thing in itself so much as because their feelings for Krishna come out when they're humble like that. So this is what happens, you know, that love of Krishna increases, and let's say the humility goes this way. And just like with love of Krishna, there's no upper limit. Humility has no lower limit. No matter how humble you are, you can always look and see, oh, I can be humbler. And when you start to understand a little bit about some of the Brijbasis, you can get a scope of the idea of just, you know, the amazing humility. The greater they are, the humbler are. Like if you look at Sri Mata Radharani, it's just inconceivable how she thinks of herself. Prabhupada somewhere has a purport about Tulsi Devi. That Tulsi Devi here, you see, she's like not so spectacular a plant. And little bitty tiny flowers and everything like that. But all the other flowers in Vrindavan, with their showy blossoms and their spectacular displays and their huge, heavy, overwhelming scents, they all worship her because of her humility. And because of her humility, she takes this really simple, manifest this really simple form. And that's one reason why chanting in front of Tulsi is so useful, because we were reminded of the humility that Tulsi's Krishna's favorite plant. And why is he so attracted because of that feature? Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. My impression is for myself is that. I said this already. The Krishna is doing everything, but we have some freedom, and the freedom is the freedom to make ourselves amenable to Krishna's will, to make ourselves receptive to the holy name. We have degrees of receptivity, and that's why to me it begins with paying attention, just paying attention. You can't create feelings. If you try to become humble artificially, then you become proud because you're so humble. with just a few simple things that we take care of, then it will take you through this process. And the thing is that we have to chant while avoiding the offenses. But there's freedom, so something is within our grasp. But really, it's the freedom to accept what Krishna is offering us. And then we should see these things happen. Because this, then there should be this, then there should be this, then there should be this. This is what our acharyas have said. What do you think?
I agree.
He agrees.
There's two processes. One is cleansing the heart, because the soul, being part and parcel of Krishna, has all good qualities. So when we clean the dirt that's covering the soul, then the good qualities will come out. And the other is to act. It's not like it's not artificial. It's a practice. It's a practice that you act. Like Prabhupada gave the example that in the material world you become qualified as a high court judge and then you sit on the bench. But in Krishna consciousness, you sit on the bench and then you develop the qualifications. Sort of like when one of the early disciples said, he didn't really feel like bowing down when the other devotees bowed down. Should he bow down anyway? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, and then the feeling will follow. So that's there, like Prabhupada, Prabhu, we dress each other as Prabhu. To if we're conscious of it, it means we're seeing
there,
the
right?
other as master and ourselves as servant. And when I joined, I was told, that if the rule is, if someone asks you to do some service for them, you should agree, but you should never ask anyone to do service for you. While we were together, but Sridhar Swami asked Radhanath Swami about humility, and he said, in the beginning a lot of it was practice, but when you practice enough, it becomes natural. So
does the practice also awaken a desire? Because it seems like what you're saying, at a certain point you just realize being humble is the trade-off for getting love of Krishna. And so there's a desire, and just like, this is what I want.
Yeah.
Therefore I want to be humble. But when I practice it, so I'm getting it. Can we see it just like anything inside of sadhana? You practice, you get a taste.
Yeah, there's different stages of sadhana that develops. To me, I mean, the other thing that is good not to forget, especially when you get up to the gateway to the perfectional stage, like asakti, is other people get involved, like Krishna's associates, like the six Goswamis, because really, just say you want to become belong to a business firm or a medical practice, or want to get into a graduate school. That means you want to become associates of a certain group of people, and they check you out to see if you're qualified. So similarly, really our goal works on two levels. We want to be the associates of the devotees in Chaitanya Leela and also in Krishna Leela. So we want to be accepted. Krishna is social. And really, Prabhupada said once that Krishna by himself is not particularly attractive. But he's never by himself. That's the other thing. He's in the association of devotees. And so really, when love of Krishna really starts to begin, it's really because somebody has helped us. Somebody has given us something. Somebody who has real love for Krishna lets us have a glimpse of how Krishna looks through their eyes. You know, and that's just a pure. You didn't do anything to get that. You know, it's just like somebody does something like that, because you become welcomed. Let me just tell you the time I spent in Vrindavan. I mean, there are people that do this every year, so I'm really an amateur, but. But it was such a good experience for me doing this Kartika Vrata. One of the things that happened to me is I got this, for some reason, this super appreciation for Raghunath Das Goswami. And I have to say, I had always thought him very weird. The thought of a person like just spending the whole day long offering obeisances, I mean, and you know his really, I you know, I guess that this is a, you know, Sanatan Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, these scholars, people like that, I could really appreciate, but here's this very strange person. So I always had like this kind of not appreciation for him, and it changed really drastically. I began to get this real appreciation for Raghunath Das Goswami, and I guess maybe where I was, and maybe some mercy from somewhere. But I began to think of him and all the other Goswamis, and then. Then, some particular point I had, it was like a vision. Just an image that came into my mind. It was like a dream in the sense like sometimes you have these dreams that are super lucid and just charged with feeling like crazy. This was like that, but I wasn't asleep. And I saw myself standing in a field. Over on the left side, there's a line of trees, and then there's a kind of a field. And then over here, around a few isolated trees, it's sort of toward dusk, and there's a little fire burning, and there's people around the fire. And I know that those people are the six Goswamis and their friends. Their associates. And I'm sitting across the field and I'm watching them, and more than anything else in the world, I want to come and join them. And I have this, but I know I'm not worthy. I'm just not qualified. But then this weird thing happened. It happened, and this thing is that, so I'm just staying there, and I just wait. That's all. And it seems like I'm willing to wait whatever long it takes, forever. I'll just be patient, and I'll just wait. But I have this vision that someday, somewhere along the line, somebody in that circle will look up and see me and say, "Oh, come here." And I'll go up to this group of people, and somebody will say something like, "Can you get us some more firewood?" And, you know, that's the greatest day of my life. So I go out and I get the firewood and I bring it. And they say, sit over here. Maybe we'll have something else for you to do. You know, that made it. You know? It was like the most charged thing, you know. And so the idea that really what we're about is so personal. It's personal with Krishna, but it's personal with the devotees. And it's that we want to be a join and accept this group, the six Goswamis, or maybe in their gopi forms also in Krishna Leela, that somebody takes us and brings us in. So at a certain point, when you get to the transition from sadhana to sadhya, other people in charge all along, but you notice. I mean, we're being guided by Prabhupada, by our spiritual master, and by everybody's. We're really taken care of. You know, and all we have to do is just show our willingness, our desire, and. That's my impression of what happens. By the way, I mean, I'm still standing in the field waiting. I don't know what to think I'm like. But what I want to say is, as long as we are in some way really in touch with the holy name, that we will receive the guidance that we need and the instruction that we need. We need a lot of guidance. We need a lot of instruction. But there's a super soul in the heart, you know. I mean, you're not sitting all by yourself going through something. There's a super soul who gets actively engaged when a devotee wants to turn to them. Krishna said, the dami buddhi yogam tam. So what does that mean? He gives them the intelligence. The intelligence means the discrimination to know what to do next and what to do next and what to do next. And if I don't have it when I need it, then in Krishna's mercy will send somebody to help me out. Well, this is what happens. At least what little experience I've had. And there's things you have to be careful about. Like when we get a little experience in the holy name, you know, we start to go through changes. But one has to be careful to just kind of let that happen and not pay so much attention. You start looking at yourself instead of at Krishna, you know. It goes away. So one has to kind of ignore many things that are going on in your body and your mind, because they'll distract you from Krishna. These are sort of some side effects or something or whatever. They're not important. Well, Krishna has to be important. There's so many things that you get distracted by. So you have to take care. And keep Krishna in the center.
You know, we're presenting instructions to help devotees to put themselves in the best position to receive Krishna's mercy and achieve the goal of Krishna Prema. But Krishna is very personal, and Srimad Bhagavatam and the same verses are cited by Lord Chaitanya, as reported in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Krishna says that if someone approaches me with material desires, he's certainly very foolish. Because he's asking for poison when I could give him nectar. But although he's very foolish, I'm very wise. And I will not fulfill desires that will cause him to come back again and again to petition me for more fulfillment of material desires. But I will deal with him in such a way that he'll forget his material desires. And I'll forcibly drag him towards me. So there's a dynamic, the relationship between the devotee and Krishna. And Krishna will help the devotee, you know, achieve the real goal of life, even if the devotee has other desires. And there's the story of Dhruva Maharaj. He wanted a kingdom, but he engaged very strongly in devotional practices. And then when he finally saw the Lord, he forgot the kingdom. He thought the kingdom was like a piece of broken glass compared to the jewel of Krishna. So there is that verse, Asarvakam.
Moksha Kama.